This is the Last Minute Blues Podcast with Donnie Fandango, Jeff Burton, Alex Ferrario, and former Blues defenseman Jamie Rivers.
It is the Last Minute Blues Podcast. Donnie Fandango in studio with Jeremy Rutherford from The Athletic, as well as our good buddy Alex Ferrario from 101 ESPN. Gentlemen, happy almost Christmas to you. How we doing? Everybody doing all right?
Well, Alex, it must be Christmas for a lot of people because no traffic on the way to the studio.
Let me tell you,
everybody's off.
I didn't go slower than 65 on the highway, which I was following the speed limit rules, everyone listening, but I didn't go slower than that. Typically, I go 35 on the highway to get here on Tuesday mornings.
Yeah, I guess I got out a little earlier than you dudes, because I ran into a little bit, enough to make me irritated, you know what I mean? I honestly, there's nothing, and I'd say this, there are a few things in our city that I hate like I do 270. And I know it's not a real thing. But I hate it so much. And then I moved. Not only did we move, but we moved 3 miles off of 270, which I thought to myself, oh, this will be great. Far enough off the highway. Oh, great idea when there's days for traffic, so then the entire 3 miles can be backed up to get on the friggin' highway.
Well, don't tell this to Kerry Davis, because if you complain about St. Louis traffic, he'll tell you about Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
Six other
Any
cities.
Pro athlete you can complain to about traffic, be like, yeah, okay, sure.
Well,
sure.
You know what? That's fine. So it sucks there, too. Well, it sucks here, and I still have the right to say how much it sucks.
Is there anywhere that doesn't suck with traffic?
No.
Boca Raton, Florida, because they're in wheelchairs?
Golf carts, something
golf
like that.
Carts?
But you're right. I mean, you know, people are what people are all over the place, so it's not just here, not just there.
No,
but it's frustrating, and it's one of my least favorite parts about our wonderful town.
It gets bad here, though. Like, it gets to the point where road rage takes over in these parts.
Oh, I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, I was going to say, which I might be part of the select few.
I don't know about invented it, perfected maybe.
Invented, I don't know.
Donnie actually has a 101 class on tape that he films for people to watch on Road Rage 101.
So, honest to goodness, and this doesn't have to do with Road Rage, but I guess it kind of does. I will not put a Bills sticker or license plate cover or any of that stuff on my car because, one, I don't want people to know. You want to do that, Jeremy? Is this how we're going to go? I always think that we're friends until we get into the room. No, not so much.
JR puts on that facade of friendship until he
but
sees
boy,
an opening.
Boy, he brings out the daggers, man.
He sees an opening and it's just boom.
Actually, they're playing well now. That would have been a better joke a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Weeks ago, it would have been a much better joke.
Hey, man, I'm just enjoying it week by week, brother. That's all I could do. I'm just happy to be watching football games and breathing at the same time. Like,
why no stickers, though? What do you?
Oh, because I don't want people to like be like, that's a Buffalo Bills sticker in South County. That's probably got to be Donnie. I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to. I feel like I'm setting my car up to have the tires slashed or something like that, or to get keyed or somebody
to
pee on it
smart,
or something
to
like
pee
that.
On it.
I mean, I don't know, man.
To Jeffco, I think it's all still Raiders stuff from the 80s and 90s, still stuck on the dots.
Well, that's coming back around, though.
Louis steamers probably on a windshield somewhere.
Dude. All right. So, guys, all right, listen. Hey, listen, enough niceties and joking aside.
Oh, here we go.
What a freaking crazy week to be a Blues fan. Holy Toledo.
What happened? JR's still trying to breathe.
Dude, this is so amazing. Okay, so coach gets fired. Talk about it last week. We're all still stunned. Mm-hmm. The whole thing. In the wake of this, Jordan Kyrou asked about his coach by our former coach, by potentially somebody in this room, he gives a very short, very curt answer, and the fans let him freaking have it. I have so many mixed emotions. I have so many questions to ask about this, but I want to first start out by saying that, first and foremost, I think that you can think that Jordan Kyrou acted like a jerk, kind of got busted in it, but then is also young enough that he can learn from mistakes like this. And I think in the grand scheme of things, it's just not that big of a deal, grand scheme of things. But for this young man's career, I think that it could be a big deal. Because that, to me, what just happened in that 12-hour span, Berube, his Kyrou's comments, and then the booing and stuff, and then the postgame, you have to think that dude did some maturing and some friggin' growing up and some holy smokes, I better be very careful on how I say and what I say.
Yeah, it's really a lot to digest, and you know, I figured we could give some context here to the situation.
Yeah,
you know, I've talked about it this week, but just to let you guys, you know, here's how I see it. I walked into the locker room. Jordan Kyrou was sitting by himself at his stall. A lot of the other players had been asked already, hey, what do you think about the coaching move? What do you think about Craig Berube? And they gave their answers, right? Great coach, you know, great guy, stinks he lost his job, so on and so forth. So I wanted to ask Jordan Kyrou. So I approached him. I asked two questions first. I said, hey, what did you think of the coaching situation, the move? And he said, I don't know, nothing really. And that was kind of a quick, curt answer, right? And I thought, okay, well, you know, something's going, obviously, you know, a lot of people speculated about their relationship. But then I said, hey, you've played for Drew Bannister in San Antonio. What do you think? Oh, I like him. We do power play drills early. We do yada, yada. And I said, you know what? I got to ask some tough questions sometimes. It's not always fun, but I do want to ask you, just because I've been asked a lot about your relationship with Craig Berube, you know, would you want to say anything about that? And that's when he said what he said, no comment. He's not my coach anymore. And Donnie, here's where it's great to be on a podcast, because you can provide more context than you can in a story or a tweet or something like that. But, you know, so he's taken off his skates. He just came off the ice. It's a game day. He's going to go back, get cleaned up, head out, take his nap, get ready for the game, right? So a lot of times Alex knows in these situations, they're kind of quick, right? You know, so you have that element to the situation, but also you have the element of, this is a guy who's going to be here for 7 or 8 years. And I'm not going to sit here and grill him on the coaching comment that he made. Also, if this is an 18, 19-year-old kid, I've done this before, you say, hey, buddy, that might not be the best thing to say here. I'm not going to do that with a 25-year-old. I can't be a filter for every single player for every single thing they say.
Nope.
So, you know, a lot of times in those situations, you go, holy smokes, this is going to cause a big stir. I'm going to go to Twitter right now and tweet this and, you know, let people know what he said. I didn't do that. Like 3 hours passed, and I was at my laptop, and I start kind of tweeting some quotes that happened from the skate that day, and that was one of them. Did I know it was going to get a reaction? Yes. Did I know it was going to elevate to the level that it did? No. And, you know, I'll throw it back to you guys here in a second, but the one thing I'll say is, once it exploded and once it got to the point where people were saying that they were going to boo Jordan Kyrou, I mean, it was total lump in the throat, you know, stomach drops, can't believe this is going to be a situation to get to that level. And so when I got to the game, and I think Alex and I were sitting next to each other, and he touches the puck and there's the booing, it's like, yikes, you know, this is something. So, you know, we can discuss this even further. I just wanted to set
So the uncomfortable, obviously, just saying this, so the uncomfortable part for you, obviously, is that the last goddang thing that you want to do, Jeremy Rutherford, is become a part of the story in any way, shape, or form.
Any way, shape, or form, any story, anything, any, you don't want to be in the middle of it.
You're just, you are just conveying it for the hockey fans. So that was just... As I'm watching it at home, because I texted Alex, once I read your thing, I texted Alex, and it was a slew of swear words.
I had to shield my eyes at times.
Like,
clutch my pearls.
And we talked about it. You think people are going to boo him. I was surprised that people did it. Once the game started, I was even more surprised that they kept doing it.
Like,
you know, so then... me being the crazy person that I am, by the third period, I'm starting to think, well, we're going to run a 40-goal scorer out of town. We're going to run a 40-goal scorer out of town by booing. And I start thinking to myself, I don't know the right thing is here, but I know I don't like what he said about my coach. I don't like that a lot of us know that he was a part of the problem. He is an answer to a lot, but he has been a bit of a problem from time to time. And so it was just this whole, like, holy crap. And then the post-game thing happens, and you see him so upset, and you're like, wow, this is a guy that does want to be here. And that's when, I guess, maybe my dad or old man instincts start to kick in, and I go, well, you know what, man? Sometimes you got to learn lessons the hard way, and this is a friggin' hard way to learn a lesson, but, you know, maybe it made a difference to the kid.
I mean, initial thoughts when, because we came off the air, our last segment on BK and Ferrario was when JR sent the tweet out. I hadn't seen it. BK saw it before me, and he read it on air. And so I'm hearing the words, and I'm thinking, the one way, it's the same how you misconstrue text messages from everybody. You read it one way, and you're like, oh, this guy just gave Craig Berube a middle finger. And then you read it again, and you're like, oh, maybe he was just saying, you're not my coach anymore. I'm moving on. So it's like, okay, I understand it, but the narrative of the Jordan Kyrou, Craig Berube saga was pushed in this direction. You had everything from last season. You had this season where he wasn't scoring goals and everyone was like, oh, you need more from Jordan Kyrou. Well, he's playing defensive hockey and this is Craig Berube's problem. This hit the perfect storm, though, because of what happened in that Detroit Red Wings game. And I said this on my show. If Kyrou doesn't turn that puck over on the 6-on-5 when the goal, or 6-on-4 or whatever, when a goal goes in the back of the net and they lose that game and Berube gets fired, maybe those words aren't taken out of context as much as they were following that Detroit Red Wings game. Maybe they're still taken out of context because people knew that Kyrou and Berube butted heads. But it was the perfect storm of Kyrou turns the puck over, they lose to the Detroit Red Wings, Berube gets fired, Armstrong talks about how they need a new voice in there, ipso facto, Jordan Kyrou is the reason Craig Berube's gone. And this is the part that, the more I thought about it, the more I'd understand, the frustration from Jordan Kyrou wasn't so much about the words he used. It was more about that Craig Berube's not here tied in with the words that he used. And that's where I think the booing came from. I think the booing came from, and I expected it when they announced his name in the starting lineup. I'm like, yeah, he's going to get booed. I didn't expect it to carry over from the first period to the second period to the third period, but St. Louis sports fans are very smart. And that wasn't a, oh, bleep Jordan Kyrou, this guy. That was St. Louis sports fans, St. Louis Blues fans, letting Jordan Kyrou know that you can't be bigger than the team. And I think that's where it hit that perfect eclipse of his emotions. The next game, he plays well, and he gets a raucous crowd cheering moment at Enterprise Center.
Yeah, I think Alex is right in terms of the perfect storm, all the things that come together. You know, I'll take it even a step further, Alex, and say that, like, you know, when you go out in public and you go to a barbecue, you go wherever, you know, as a Blues writer, I would say that half the time you get asked a lot of questions, and a majority of the time they include, what's the relationship like between Craig Berube and Jordan Kyrou?
Yeah.
And that's what led me to, in that moment, ask Jordan Kyrou that question. So, you know, I do think there's an element of his performance, you know, lack of goal scoring that kind of leads to the frustration, that leads to the buildup. And if you didn't put a name on that comment and you just put no comment, he's not my coach anymore, and you put it in front of a lot of people and said, who said this? Which Blue said it? The guess would be Jordan Kyrou,
yeah.
Right? So I think that's kind of where that comes from. Now, let me touch on one other thing. You know, people say, oh, why'd you feel bad if you didn't do anything wrong? If you just quoted them, why would your stomach drop when they're booing? It's just part of, you know, the whole situation. Well, I think in that situation, when it gets to that level and they're booing, the hometown fans are booing a player, you just start to think, okay, how could I have handled it maybe differently? Because you just quoted them, right? But with Twitter, it's difficult to provide the tone.
Yep.
The context was there. It was not taken out of context. He said it. But the tone, is it flippant? Is it malicious? You know, did he just say it matter-of-factly? Is there anything else you could have tweeted to provide more to the person who's reading it on Twitter so that people like Alex, when they see it, they're not wondering, how did he say it? What did he say?
But you really can't provide.
You can't provide.
Not, I mean, the words came out because I heard the words. It was no comment. He's not my coach anymore. As bold and as matter-of-fact of a statement as you can ask.
And so he did say it. You know, then you start to wonder, maybe Twitter wasn't the spot for it. Maybe it was an Athletic article. Maybe it was a situation where you could go back to him and say, hey, I'm going to write about this. Is there anything else that you would like to say, you know, in response to what you said earlier? So, you know, there's so many different directions that you could have gone. I'm not saying any of them are the right one. I'm just saying, as the writer who's suddenly in the middle of the situation where a hometown player is getting booed, you think about, is there any other way?
Okay.
Go ahead, Tony.
No, I was just going to say, like, from a fan perspective, though, bro, you could hold on to that for an Athletic article, and I could still be reading it, and in that context, I'm still going to get pissed off about it. I mean,
think it'd be worse if – not the worst. I think it would have gotten bigger if it was the Athletic article, because then people would have – because you would have written it, and it would have come out the next day following, I guess – well, no, it might have been good, because it would have come out following a Blues victory. Maybe that would have been a little – I'm not saying you should have done it that way, but what I'm saying is I think a Blues fan would have still seen those words, and it still would have stung even with a Blues win.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't so much about him. It was more about Craig Berube. People came to the defense of Craig Berube.
Yeah, and boy – and I mean – and I think, too, the speed in which that it happened, I think – I think if Blues fans were given another maybe 24 to 36 hours before there was a game, maybe the booing isn't as loud. Maybe it's not as consistent. But boy, those fans, that was raw. Like that Band-Aid had just been ripped off and people were still screaming.
Frankly, it goes to show you how impactful social media is because, I mean, what? Came out at 1:45 and by 7 o'clock that night, people had seen it. People reacted to it. I mean, it was everywhere. I mean, you had John Buccigross pick it up with ESPN. You had Spittin' Chiclets pick it up. Like, everybody jumped in on that. And it sparked conversation, which is never a bad thing. And that's the part that is so infuriating with something like that, because what you don't want to happen, why I would imagine JR's lump was in his throat when that happened, was because now you get the players that don't want to talk because they think everything's going to get spun a wrong direction, and then that's a disservice to the fan base because if they're not going to talk, fans don't get that behind-the-scenes look. And that's why I think it's always good to spark conversation, and that's why I felt like it was such a good response by Blues fans that Saturday night to where they stopped booing, because I was worried it was going to keep going.
Yeah.
And what you don't want to happen is you don't want to keep pouring salt in that wound. It's, look, he the point was made
yes.
very clear. He was in tears afterwards. He realized that was a growing moment for him. And I personally respect the fact that Saturday he came out and played a really strong game. Blues fans cheered for him, and then he had his reaction the next day. Hopefully that is something that he says, now I need to really think before I speak to somebody when it comes to how that's going to sound.
You know, one of the things that I do not take into account, and I know that I should, and I know that this is something that we all know, but, you know, man, and I think sometimes we get so lost in how much money that these dudes make that we forget the fact that they're human beings. And one, like, I would assume that since Jordan Kyrou was, what, 12, 13 years old, literally all homeboy has done is played hockey at an exceptionally high level.
Yeah.
Everything else has been secondary to
scored goals, best player on the team.
Yeah.
Every time, everywhere he goes. All right.
Sounds like me in junior baseball, basketball, football, everything. I was great at that.
Sure.
You could tell, can't you, Donnie?
Yeah.
Makes sense. I know.
But I mean, I feel like there's a point. I mean, there was a point to be learned here from this guy. And I think, man, sometimes these guys live in such a bubble that maybe sometimes they don't realize the weight that their words carry. Should they? Absolutely. But if you're 25 and that's been your kind of bubble, I mean, I can see that. I can see you not having the perspective to know how you're sounding, what it's going to sound like. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and I think, personally, that's where the tears came from after that game. I don't think it was about what he said, and I think it was more about those tears came from the fans' reaction to it. I think that was that first moment by Jordan Kyrou that was like, oh, geez, it's like these fans, they know their stuff, and I've never been booed before in my life from a home team.
Yeah.
That's where I felt like those tears came from. That was kind of that eye-opening moment for Jordan Kyrou that it's like, yeah, it's like maybe this gets a lot bigger in certain situations than what it should have been.
Yeah, and I don't want to be the person to say this because, again, I go back to don't want to be in the middle of the story. You know, for 20-plus years, you just report the story, and here's what happened, and here's what people said. So you don't want to be part of the story. But in the past 4 or 5 days, I've had so many people tell me, you know, maybe this will be a turning point for him in terms of that understanding. So
yeah.
To clarify, that's not me saying that. That's just people who've witnessed the situation and said – kind of exactly what Alex is saying here is that, you know, people can turn on you. People can speak the truth to you. A fan base that adores you and cheers, you know, comes out of their seats every time you score a wicked goal like you do. You know, if there's something you say that they're not on board with, which obviously Craig Berube's popularity is what Alex mm-hmm. said, that's what led to that kind of reaction. You know, then maybe whether he understands that or he understands that they want him to play harder and give a better effort every night, you know, whatever it is, perhaps it could be a turning point. I don't wish that would have happened. I don't think that it needed to happen. I think that Jordan, as he grows and matures, can become that player. I just think that, you know, what a lot of people have said is it could be some sort of turning point.
And just a couple of different perspectives on it, because we talked to a ton of people last week with the breakdown. First of all, I thought Paul Bissonnette had a really good breakdown on Spittin' Chiclets about it, to what JR just said of one of those people that's like, look, people can turn on you no matter what. And Bissonnette talked about, look, the love for Craig Berube was a big deal in St. Louis, and people people in St. Louis attach to that workhorse, that blue-collar mentality, yeah, and man. That's why they attach to Craig Berube. But we talked to Bruce Boudreau last week, former NHL head coach, and asked him about it, and he even said, like, look, as if I was his coach, I would have put my arm around him after that game and said, look, probably not the best thing to say. Maybe stay away from the media for a couple of days, but you're going to make it through this because this is just a lump in the road that you push through. But I thought the best breakdown was from Mike Rupp, former NHL Stanley Cup winner with the Devils. He works for NHL Network. He said, this is a turning moment for a 25-year-old kid that, to what we've just talked about, has always been the star on his team. And he said, every player, no matter where you come from, if you're Sidney Crosby, if you're a guy in the American Hockey League, you always have one of those moments that you make the wrong decision and your career could go a different direction. But he said his biggest hiccup, his biggest mountain he's going to have to overcome is figuring out how to do that yourself. He said, coaches can't carry you through this. PR can't carry you through this. He's like, the only way you make good for what took place was your play on the ice. He said, if your play on the ice backs up what the fan base thinks of you, then they're going to keep booing. If the play on the ice backs up what the fan base thinks of you, then they're going to cheer for you. And he said, that's where it comes down for a Jordan Kyrou.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history,
Vegas Golden Knights.
History, we're back to a blank slate, clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'll be dang. This is so freaking fascinating. Okay, couple things. I want to obviously talk about Drew Bannister in the last couple games here for the note. But one thing I wanted that I've just been kind of thinking about over the course of the last week since Coach Berube got fired. You know, guys, what is the – I feel like the lifespan of an NHL coach is like freaking 3, 4, maybe 5 years. And I don't know if it's a good thing, bad thing, but it's – definitely feels like a weird thing that like that the churn is there. It's almost like the players know, hey man, if we don't dig this dude, we just got to wait him out, and it probably won't even be that long of a wait, and we'll get a new guy in. What do you guys think about that? I mean, is that, and maybe that's just my perception from the outside. You know what I mean?
Going back to Boudreau, when we talked to him, we asked him because he's been fired midseason and hired midseason three separate times. And he said, my lifespan has been about 3.5 to 4 years. And he said, I don't know why. He said, if I knew the answer, I'd still probably have a job right now. But Berube, I thought, said it yesterday best with BK and Ferrario. He said, it's leadership. He said, leadership is how the message doesn't get stale. And he's not wrong. I mean, look, when Ken Hitchcock's message got stale, I'm doing air quotes on the radio, you can see that. That was the year after David Backes left. And David Backes was kind of that voice of the locker. I mean, he was the captain. And if you lose a leader that can take a coach's message and relay it to a group of players, well, now who's relaying that message to the group of players? It's a new leadership core. And if they're not around that coach, if they don't like that coach, well, welcome to the voice getting stale. The same can kind of be said for a Craig Berube, to where that leadership core that was Alexander Steen, Alex Petrangelo, David Perron, that took his words and said, this is what it means. Well, it's not pushing that way. And I know Braden Schenn's the leadership there, but it's not just one person. I think it's a core of players. And I think that's why you've seen it around the National Hockey League. Some teams do it because they need a spark, Minnesota, Edmonton. But I think other teams do it because if they don't have the right personnel around that head coach, well, then that message is not going to coincide with the group of players.
Yeah, I think it can be either one. I think it can be the message growing stale. That was not the situation here necessarily, I don't believe. In the case of like a Ken Hitchcock, yeah, maybe it gets stale. I think it did. So there's a lot of times where I think that, okay, there's a lot of players that are on this team who have had a certain coach like a Ken Hitchcock for 4 or 5 years, and it's just time to end the day, right? But I think with a guy like Craig Berube, Alex, you know, mentioned what Craig Berube said on the air yesterday on 101 ESPN, that it's a leadership. And if there's a lot of turnover in that leadership, there's no longer the guys who had success with you, the O'Reillys, the Alex Petrangelos, and those types of guys who can grab the young guy and say, hey, listen, we've done it this way. We've won. This is the guy who took us there. You need to get in line. And if you don't have that, then perhaps that message isn't getting through to the rest of the team. You know, Braden Schenn's still here. Colton Parayko's still here. Were those guys doing that? You know, we don't know. But Craig Berube, as he said yesterday, he thinks that if that message is being delivered to the rest of the team, that a coach can outlast 4 to 5 years.
Boy, oh boy. I'm glad I don't know anything about hockey. I mean, and plus too, like, and then I start to think about the you know, man, and I know that this is not my place. I'm just a fan. But, you know, I liked Berube so much, and I got to thinking, like, man, dude, like, I wonder if maybe he's going to at least get to see his kids for a couple of months before he takes another gig, or like he's going to get to spend some time with his wife. And I thought that would be kind of nice. But then I'm like, well, is he going to be bummed out because he got canned that he's not going to be able to enjoy that time? You know, so like I just take this way too seriously.
Yeah, I think that's it. For about 20 minutes, and he was in a good spot. He said, you know, do I want to continue with these guys? He actually said something that stuck out to me, Donnie. He said, you know, if I would have got fired last year, this would have made maybe a little more sense with the way last year went. He said they felt like this year they had kind of put some things together. Now, people might disagree with that. The power play was awful. You know, the up and down, win, lose, things like that. So, you know, you step back, you can understand why there was a reason why you would consider moving on from Craig Berube at this point. And we'll talk about Drew Bannister, I'm sure, here in a minute and what the team looks like with him. But, yeah, I think he'll take some time off. And what he told me is that he wants to pick the right spot. I know it's cliche. Everybody says that. But, I mean, it's true. He's got a successful track record. He can kind of hand pick, but where are those spots? You look across the 31 other teams, and you know a lot of teams got a coach, or they got a young guy, or they got a guy they just hired, you know, things like that. So what are the
Donnie's already got it.
Who do you got?
Well, if you're like a team like friggin' Columbus, aren't you going to back up the goddamn Brinks truck to get somebody like Berube in there?
That's a team that does make a lot of sense, yeah.
Especially when you're talking about the players that they have. I mean, Johnny Gaudreau and Patrick Laine don't match the identity of Craig Berube, but
right.
Like a Boone Jenner does, their entire defensive core does. To me, the team was Ottawa. Now, and I know they just brought in that Jacques Martin to be the interim head coach. Ottawa was the team that was like, if you ever wanted a coach that took you to the next level, it's Craig Berube, because look at their captain, Brady Tkachuk. Look at their roster, a ton of big dudes that have size. Their defensemen like to get into the play. They're all really big guys. Their goaltending's their biggest problem. That was the team that I was like, if I'm the Ottawa Senators, I would have fired DJ Smith the moment I saw Craig Berube become available. But there's a couple teams that make sense. But the question is, are you going to actually do it? And does Craig Berube want to go there?
Yeah, does he want to go there? That's the biggest thing. I think Ottawa makes more sense than Columbus because they're closer to winning. And then also in Columbus, you got the whole, you know, hierarchy with Yarmo and JD. How much longer are they going to be there if things don't go right? So Ottawa makes
their team's in shambles. I don't know if I'm Craig Berube, I want to go there.
Right.
I want to go somewhere where I got a chat. The part that I was curious about would be the New Jersey Devils, but since Lindy Ruff was so good last year, it'd be hard to imagine. But they've underperformed this season, and that's another team that you look at and you say they kind of need a little bit of discipline right now.
Okay, a couple things, and I swear to God, we're going to talk about Drew Bannister here in a second. But have you guys heard any outside coaching rumors? The one in which that I have heard over the course of the last couple of days, which obviously just has to do with the name value. I'm not saying there's anything here, but a lot of folks have wondered if Joel Quenneville could potentially be a possibility. And there's a lot of steps that would have to be taken for that to happen. But one, do you think Joel Quenneville is a realistic option, A? B, if it's not Coach Q, what are some of the other names out there that you're hearing? Not internally, obviously.
I think that it's a possibility. I don't want to rule out Joel Quenneville, even if you think that it might not happen. I don't want to rule it out. You know, I think that obviously St. Louis has an affinity for Joel Quenneville, one of the best coaches in team history. Obviously, everybody in St. Louis is aware of what happened in Chicago, and maybe some people think he did nothing wrong. Maybe people think he was part of it. They wouldn't want him here in St. Louis. As far as Joel Quenneville coming back to the NHL, and I think he has to be reinstated, obviously, by Gary Bettman, St. Louis, I think, would be one of the places in the league that would welcome him because of that past history and all the success that he had here. So I think his familiarity with St. Louis, I think would be probably a place that he would consider heavily. The one thing I would say from the Blues' perspective is, I guess, two things. One is, do the Blues want to put themselves in a situation like that where they're welcoming back a coach who was part of that situation?
Correct.
Whatever you think the culpability was, would you want to welcome him back? And then two, is he the right fit for this team in the situation that it's in, where it wants to win now, but yeah, it's in a retool and it's kind of looking forward to... So how does Quenneville, he's going to come in, he's going to grab the veterans, he's going to probably win some games with this team, but Dvorsky, you want me to develop him? Okay, Snuggerud's coming up. Like, is Joel Quenneville in it for the retool? Is he in it to develop some of those younger guys? So that's the questions I would have.
Well, and that's what Berube said yesterday with BK and Ferrario. He said, like, they asked him how difficult it is to not only win in the NHL but develop while you're trying to win. And he said it's one of the toughest things as a coach to do. And he said it's not impossible, but it's very difficult because you're putting young players in a position to succeed. But if they're not ready for that position, well, how are you going to win if you're going to hit those hiccups? So that's, I don't know if Quenneville wants that. If you're Quenneville and you're getting an opportunity to come back, one, JR is absolutely correct. St. Louis is going to be probably one of the few areas that would welcome him back and actually be happy for him to be here rather than other places that I think would look at it and be like, what's going on right now? Not saying that everyone would be. I'm sure there's a large lump of fans that would not feel great about it. But, I mean, if you're Joel Quenneville, like, you won in Chicago, you were in Florida and you won there, like, do you really want to go somewhere where winning might still be a couple of years away compared to, let's say, I go to Ottawa and Ottawa throws money at me if they're available, or, you know, New Jersey fires rough in the offseason. Like, those are the teams that Quenneville would make sense for. When I asked Darren Dreger this about the coach that makes sense, he immediately pushed back and said, let's not overlook Drew Bannister. He's like, Drew Bannister is a young head coach, and how many times have we seen AHL head coaches come to the NHL and have success, i.e. Craig Berube with the Blues last time? So he said, Drew Bannister is a guy that knows hockey. He's been around hockey his entire career. He was a second-round draft pick. So he said, don't overlook a guy like this that really could take the team and run with it. The other one that I thought of, just I'm going to throw this out there, tinfoil for both of you, Carolina and Rod Brind'Amour don't have a contract beyond this season.
Oh, stop it. You know what, man? When you say stuff like that, then the hair on the back of my neck.
I'm just saying.
They also don't have a goalie.
So there you go. Sounds like a coach being like, well, this team's in shambles. Maybe I'll go elsewhere.
We talked about this last week, dudes. I just feel like the way for this team is got to be one of these younger guys, and is not... I don't look at Coach Q as a retread, but it can't, guys, it cannot be that, like what we talked about, the Gerard Gallants. That doesn't make sense,
Donnie,
right?
You're 100% right. The only thing is, I think Brind'Amour is in a different category.
Oh,
than
yeah.
Those
oh,
other
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I didn't even mean to.
Donnie's just discarding that because it's not even a real thing.
That just got me all titillated.
Brind'Amour is obviously one of the elite coaches in the league, and if he has any interest whatsoever, you for sure have to consider that. But yeah, no, you're right. I don't think it makes any sense whatsoever to bring in a Gallant or any of these guys, you know, who want to win absolutely right now. Their jobs, you know, are they going to be here in 2 years if they don't have success? That doesn't make sense. And I like what Dreger said. It's only been two games with Bannister, and I've known him for a few years because he's worked with the Blues American Hockey League affiliate for a while. I think whether it's Bannister or someone like him, you want somebody who can come in and I think grow with these guys, develop the young players, who has a track record of developing young players, which he does. But what makes Bannister, I think, specific to this job is the fact that he knows a lot of these young players, and he's coached them growing up.
Yeah.
They have trust in him. He has trust in them. So that's already been established. And you had that a little bit with Berube when he came in, right? He had the Barbashevs and those guys that he had coached, and I think that's part of the reason why that was successful. So we'll see. But at this point, you know, to me, I'm looking at a younger guy with a track record of improving young players.
I mean, not to make this comp because it's not the same thing, but that's what Tampa did with John Cooper. mean, John Cooper was in their minor league affiliate for a couple of years, and then they brought him up. The first year they were there, they missed the playoffs. Next year they got in. The next year they made it to the finals. Then they missed the playoffs again. Like, they were in that retreading situation. And then John Cooper, who's now, what, 56? And he's been with them since 2012. Again, not the same thing. I'm not saying Drew Bannister is the next John Cooper, but what I'm saying is, there are plenty of examples around the National Hockey League of successful teams that have brought up the American Hockey League coach and said, yep, this is your roster. See what you can do with it.
Did you just tell Donnie that Cooper's coming to St. Louis?
John Cooper.
But you know what,
2.0.
man? But you know, the thing that you said, you know, we're talking about the coaches having success and longevity in an organization and having a lot to do with the leadership in that locker room, helping them bring that message. Well, that leadership in that Tampa locker room has been, correct me if I'm wrong, has been pretty much consistent for the last handful of years. So then that would make sense as to why he's still, well, I mean, I know they're not having a great year so far this year, but I mean, still have a lot of success. I mean, that would speak to that.
100%. Couple cups, same leadership core. And also you have just a great guy in Coop who knows how to relate to players. And he's on the younger side. What do you say, Alex?
56 now, still, yeah.
Yeah, he started there, real young guy.
But here's the thing, too. Like, so I'm just looking this up while we're talking. So they drafted what? Stamkos was 2000.
Yeah.
He was first round, somewhere between 6 and 9. I can't remember. They had Hedman in that window as well. So those guys were the veteran core players that were there. But he took over in 2012, 2013. Nikita Kucherov was drafted in 2011. So his first year was Cooper's second year as the NHL head coach. Braden Point was drafted 2014. So Cooper already been there for about 5 years. But these were guys that were drafted while John Cooper was the head coach of the team. And they not only competed with what they had in Stamkos and Victor Hedman, but then they also developed Kucherov, Point, Vasilevsky, Sergachev. Like, John Cooper is a perfect example of taking a group that had veteran players and bringing in younger players and meshing them together.
Yeah, and I'll piggyback off of that. I talked to Braden Schenn the other day, and I said, look, young guy comes in, minor league coach, you're a veteran, you got, you know, your veteran guys around you. Where does the respect, is it right away? And he said, yeah, this guy's coached 12 years in the minor leagues. He's worked to get to this point. You know, we're going to get behind him. And so he's got the veterans. And then look at a Jordan Kyrou situation. I'm sure you guys talked about this, Alex. But Drew Bannister sat down with Jordan Kyrou the morning of the Dallas game a couple days ago, and he said, look, you have unbelievable outside speed. You need to use it. You're not using it. You need to get outside. What did Jordan Kyrou do in that overtime goal? Got outside, drove to the net, and Colton Parayko cleans it up. So that's just one super small example of where what the veterans are saying about Drew Bannister. And then a guy like Jordan Kyrou, maybe not a veteran, but maybe not a young guy, who can learn from what Drew Bannister has to bring. So there's just so much, I think, where you look at Drew Bannister in terms of, you know, he's not just this, you know, young guy coming up who wants a crack at it. He's a legit candidate, I think, for the job.
And not to rehash on it, but just you saying that made me think about when we were talking Berube and the message getting stale. What Drew Bannister said to Jordan Kyrou is what Craig Berube said to us on the radio yesterday. Like, Kyrou's just got to compete. That's where the message gets stale, it gets misdelivered, whatever. Craig Berube saying, we need you to compete, where Drew Bannister is giving you examples of, like, this is what I want you to do, and Jordan Kyrou did that, which, again, that's the freshness of a guy who's in the American Hockey League at the time of the problems, that knows how to vocalize what he wants to a younger group of players.
Which I'm sure that Craig Berube gave him specific examples.
Absolutely.
Too, which, you know, the only thing is that Craig Berube is also the guy who benched him for periods, mm-hmm. who said things publicly, you know, that maybe he didn't like, so on and so forth. So Drew Bannister comes in, it just feels like a fresh slate for him.
Absolutely.
Listen, when I try to break down plays and things, it's not great, okay? That's not what I'm here for.
I think we need to pull video up and let Donnie do that right now.
I don't
now.
Think that's a great – well, I think that it could be funny to
Coming
hear.
Coming up in the Athletic, Donnie Fandango breaks down.
Donnie breaks down the Blues win.
All right, but I want to make this point, and then you guys can tell me if I'm wrong or not. But it seems as though, and again, it's two friggin' games – that the Blues have done an amazing job of making it absolutely freaking miserable for the other team in the neutral zone. Mm-hmm. Like, it seems like they're, God, and I don't know if I'm going to say this the right way, but it just seems like they are closing the gaps. It just seems like they're clogging up the middle more. Like, it just seems like they are making the, not only are they working more, but it seems like they're making the other team work more, too.
Jer, I don't have my glasses. Is that Drew Bannister talking to us right now, or is that Donnie Fandango?
That kinda looks
closing
like
the gap,
yeah.
Standing them up at the blue line. Look at this guy
that's,
over here.
But as far as hockeyisms go, that's all I got.
I'm going to lose my job.
Coming up next on The Athletic.
Yeah. I better start working on my DJ.
Yeah, let's see that the next...
Creed, coming up next.
New Hits Sunday, New Music Sundays. I personally thought that's what it was, and Mike Kelly of NHL Network, who does a lot of analytics work, put it out after that, what was it? I think it was after the Dallas Stars game, or the Ottawa, whichever
Ottawa,
one.
Yeah.
Who cares? He said that they won 64% of their board battles in that game, compared to 24% against the Detroit Red Wings.
Whoa.
So in one game, you had a lot more bodies on pucks, as Steve Ott would like to call it. He wants numbers, and like they did that really well against Ottawa. But the Dallas Stars game is the one that did exactly what you're talking about, to where, I mean, they didn't allow Dallas into the zone at all. It was standing them up, forcing them to dump the puck in and going back and getting it. Frankly, it looked a lot like what the Blues did in the first 10 games of the season, to where they were forcing teams to win board battles against them to retrieve pucks in the offensive zone, and they got away from it from whatever reason it was. That was the one thing that stood out to me with Drew Bannister, is those guys were engaged in loose pucks, they were engaged on winning those puck battles, and they were not allowing the other team easy zone entries, which they got into for those last 15 games.
Well, here's the thing, guys.
Okay, breakdown.
Let's pump the brake. No, I'm joking. They can go 50-0 under Drew Bannister, or whatever the number is.
There he is.
No, here's the thing. I think that when we saw the coaching change last week, we all should have ran to Vegas and said, you know, they're going to win these first couple games,
yes.
Right? Because just players are on their toes, and, you know, whether they're doing it in the defensive zone, neutral zone, and please, I am not jumping on your theory. No.
This is how he wins his athletic job back, Johnny. You know, you called it the neutral zone. It's really called.
No, it was super impressive. I think that that you're going to see that jump. Now, here's the thing, Alex. You've looked at the schedule. Donnie, you've looked at the schedule. It gets tough here in, you know, latter December, especially January, where there's going to be some tough teams. Dallas was a tough team. They look phenomenal against them. You know, I asked Drew Bannister the other day, hey, you know, how do you get past that jolt? Minnesota got it with the coaching change. Edmonton got it. How do you get past that to where you're sustaining it? And he said, you know, it's about creating these habits and continuing to play that same way. So that's what they're going through right now. You know, if guys want to keep their ears open, he wants to keep preaching, they want to start executing. But I think it does go back to the roster and these players. And are they good enough? I can't speak outside of both sides of my mouth where I say that, hey, this is Doug Armstrong's fault. This is a bad roster. It wasn't Craig Berube's coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, here we are 2 weeks later, and we're saying, wow, this is a good team, and Bannister's got them playing the way that they should be. I think we have to get to that point, wherever it is in mid-January, where we can say, okay, man, they are doing it against this team, that team. This is impressive. So I think the potential is there for him to do that based on what we've seen. Really impressive against Dallas the other night. In the neutral zone.
There it is.
But I think that we got to continue to see.
Well, and to that point, it's like the honeymoon period for new coaches. And I asked Boudreaux that too. Like, hey, how do you avoid those honeymoon periods to where it's great for about 2 weeks and then it falls apart? And he said, the way I avoided it, which, I mean, guy was in the league for a really long time. He's like, I was myself. I stayed true to who I was as a coach, and if the players didn't listen to it, then it's not going to work here. So that's going to be the one thing. Drew Bannister's not changing anything to get an opportunity like this. JR's right. It goes back to what Doug Armstrong talked at his press conference about, passion and the aggressiveness that this team is going to have to bring to it. And I'm trying to think of the word that I completely forgot right now that he used. Passion, and what was the other one?
Well, he had the accountability.
Accountability, compete, thank you. It was an A word. Yeah, accountability and compete. That's what it's going to come down to for these guys. And 2 weeks in, if they go on another losing streak, it's not going to be, oh, see, they should have had Craig Berube. It's going to go right back to the players like we've talked all about for the last two seasons.
Real quick, guys, in wrapping up, and this doesn't necessarily have to do with anything with the Blues now, but, guys, can you tell me when is the World Junior Championships?
December 26th.
Okay,
up until January.
Early January.
Yeah,
but that'll be next year. Or is that coming up in a couple of weeks?
They're doing their preliminaries right now. U.S. just cut their roster, or Canada just cut their roster down. A lot of the teams will start cutting their roster down, and then the day after the Christmas, day after Christmas is when they start the tournament, and it goes to like the beginning of January.
And it's an NHL Network situation, right? They show a lot of those games on the NHL Network.
Yeah, like at 2 a.m., so.
Oh,
actually,
boy.
I don't know where it is this year, so it might not be. Oh, yeah, 2 a.m.
2 a.m.
Probably.
Well, just because, again, I mean, if you, you know, man, if you've got legitimate concerns about your St. Louis Blues future, maybe you can watch some of these games and feel a little bit better. Maybe you won't, but I mean.
I think they got like six guys in right now.
Yeah, it's a potential.
Because I know Buchinger just got cut from the Canada roster, but they've got Dvorsky, they got Stenberg, they got Snuggerud. They got a lot of dudes that are competing in the World Juniors.
So, Donnie, 2 a.m., you and I will come home from partying where Alex, he'll have the youngins, right?
Yeah.
I'll be talking about this before.
Oh, no, I'll be sleeping at that time, too. I'll be mid-REMs at that time. Yeah.
Dudes, you parents of younger kiddos. It ain't for the weak. That's for damn sure, man. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. For Alex Ferrario, Jeremy Rutherford, Jamie Rivers, I'm Donnie Fandango, and we miss our buddy Jeff Burton very much. We always thank you very much for listening to the Last Minute Blues Podcast. And as always, let's go Blues.
The Last Minute Blues Podcast. Hear more at 1057thepoint.com.